1985 is one of those years that I call interesting and challenging for people who are interested in science. That's the first time I ever saw a picture of a kind of jagged shape in the ozone layer that surrounds our planet. It turned out to be a hole in the ozone layer. That's what it was called by scientists who published their finding in Nature. Widespread use of chlorofluorocarbons had produced a gap in the ozone layer over Antarctica, resulting in the formation of cataracts in the eyes of animals and humans. Exposure to sunlight without the protection provided by that ozone layer, which most of us had never even heard of, produced those cataracts, and people who raised sheep and cattle in South America wondered how to protect the vision of their animals. And themselves, for that matter. 1985 seems so far away now. It was the year that scientists first developed a test that could be used to determine whether a particular blood sample contained a little tiny piece of DNA or RNA. It became known as the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV. Before that virus was discovered, we talked about AIDS-related complex or ARC or gay-related immune deficiency. We had no idea it was caused by a virus. People were searching for the specific organism so that we could move away from thinking that nobody should come here from Haiti because it was only people from Haiti who got it, or only gay people, or only people who had Legionnaire's disease, or maybe it was people who had hemophilia. And if you were here in 1985, you may remember a time when families with a member who had hemophilia sometimes lost their homes to arsonists so that they'd get the message that they really needed to move to another community. Some people, including the man who was then president of the United States, his name was Ronald Reagan, and he didn't believe in even voicing that word, AIDS, and so he never did. It's 30 years on since then, and people have pretty much stopped worrying about the hole in the ozone layer. People who have HIV or AIDS can take antiretroviral medications now so that their survival is now measured in years, not in weeks, not in months. Today, we are far more concerned about the warming of our climate, accompanied by what's described as the sixth great period of species extinctions, and by catastrophic weather patterns, which are resulting in the rise of sea levels. Now, in this faith community, we believe in the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are all a part. Most of us believe what James Viola Blake wrote. He was the minister of the Evanston congregation in the Midwest, and he wrote a wonderful covenant that begins, "Love is the spirit of this church, and service is its prayer." And that means that a lot of us would describe ourselves as social activists. What seems apparent to me is that the rate at which we are called upon to absorb some kind of news, one after the other, one event after another, that's not going to slow down. In the last 3 weeks, we have been presented with the sounds of children crying as they were taken from the arms of their parents. New flooding has arisen in South Texas, with elderly people going to bed at night and getting up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom and finding out that they were up to their knees in flood water. Life expectancy in the United States has actually diminished in the last year. Suicide rates among young adults have increased dramatically. And we're trying to absorb all that information that comes at us from every direction, no matter where we listen to news, no matter what we watch, even if we try to turn everything off and avoid the whole thing, it doesn't seem possible. And that's why the people who have been involved in finding out what it is that we all ought to be reading this year, it's called the Common Read Project, and this is the book that we are all called upon to read this year. It's called Justice on Earth, and the subtitle is People of Faith Working at the Intersections of Race and Class and the Environment. Because it isn't one of those things that we need to be working on, it's all of them. It's not how one pie wedge comes up against another. It's how they overlap and what in the world we are going to do about it. Well, as you heard from the reading with which we began, Ron did a wonderful impersonation of what it is that our minds do when we get all this stuff in and not enough going out the other end. It's, oh my gosh, that shirt clashes. Where in the world did he get those shoes? Doesn't he ever comb that hair? Kathleen McTeague, who wrote that wonderful little reading, and it's in this Justice on Earth, says that there are five things that if we're going to be serious about the work we are called to do, then there are five things that we really do need to be concerned about. We need to be grounded in something beyond ourselves. If we are not able to perceive that something is bigger than any individual, then we're lost. And that means that we need what Kathleen McTeague calls spiritual practices. And if that wording doesn't do it for you, then I hope you'll find some wording that does. We need something, whether it's writing or music or photographs or something that will take us beyond ourselves. Because those practices help us to cultivate what we believe is absolutely the most important. These things remind us that if we want to change the larger world, then first we need to look at how those issues arise in ourselves. And finally, she said, these are the practices that will get us through the confusion, through the despair, through the times when we think, I cannot stand to hear one more thing. I cannot learn one more fact. Then we come here to this beloved community. And we practice those things because we need to, all of us, together. What our minds do is that monkey mind thing. I learned it as, oh, is that a butterfly? I took conflict management from a guy named Speed Lees, and you might have heard his name if you came to the workshop that we had a few weeks ago. Speed Lees is his real name. And when he started a workshop or got in the middle of one and we were all in a tangle, then he sang to us. And the things that he sang are still in my mind. They have never left and they never will. So I'm going to sing one of them for you now, and then I'm going to line it out and have you sing it back to me. It goes like this. Breathe on me, breath of God. Fill me with life anew, that I might know what thou dost know, and do what thou wouldst do. Breathe on me, breath of God. Breathe on me, breath of God. Fill me with life anew. Fill me with life anew. That I might know what thou dost know. That I might know what thou dost know, and do what thou wouldst do, and do what thou wouldst do. And again, breathe on me, breath of God. Fill me with life anew, that I might know what thou dost know, and do what thou wouldst do. And who is the thou? Well, that's what Dr. Sandeen told us. The thou is love. The spirit of love, which is in this room with us now, whatever we're facing, whatever we're dealing with. And for me, the practice that I use to get through what is one of the most difficult times I have ever experienced. This one's a pickle, it really is. And for me, that's where music comes in. So for those of you for whom singing is one of those things that you were told in third grade not to do, try it this morning, because we're going to have lots of opportunities to sing. because that's what gets me through. And if dancing does it for you, great. Now, many of you have already noticed that the sanctuary looks a little different from how it usually is, because you're really singing to each other today. Instead of all to the platform, those of you on either side are facing people on that side and on that side. And those of you in the middle, if you want to, turn to somebody else and sing to that person, because you're going to have plenty of opportunities to do it. Whatever your reaction to that word God, if it really grates on you, then substitute love. Because whatever you say and whatever you do, whatever you sing and however you react, that is what's going to get us through. And the cacophony, as we use different words, whatever it is that speaks to you, that cacophony is wonderful. The arrangement this morning is familiar to anyone who sings a practice called shape note. We sing in a hollow square like this. We don't sing to any one person. We sing to each other. So if you want to turn, do it. If you want to stand and dance, this is the time to do it. We're singing with all the people of this world who have used music to get through. The people of South Africa ended apartheid, and they did it by singing. The people in the United States with whom I grew up in apartheid ended those practices. When the Voting Rights Act passed in 1965, it wasn't an accident. It was all those songs we sang, all that music that got us all through. My people, my specific people, came from Wales. And in Wales, they sing all the time. It's a community practice. So that's why we're going to sing one of our songs today. We're going to sing the Welsh National Anthem, except we've changed the words a bit. Welsh people sang as they walked to school. They sang as they entered the mines. And if you look at those castles at Carnarvon and Raglan that Edward Longshanks, the English king, put up, well, it was the Welsh people who sang Edward right back to England, where he belonged. Grounding our work with the practice of music can help us feel positive. It gets rid of that monkey mind stuff. All that, you know, stuff that's in your head that you're thinking about even while I'm talking. Music gets us back to the singing we did in the 1960s, to the singing they did in South Africa, which ended the practice of apartheid. And I can tell you that the lesbian, gay, transgender, intersex, questioning anything community sang, when those undercover FBI agents used to come into our nightclubs, and if we were wearing clothes of the wrong gender, arrest us and put our names in the paper, we sang a lot in those days. We sang Song of the Soul along with a singer named Chris Williamson. We sang with a wonderful Australian singer-songwriter named Judy Small, and we rejoiced when a singer named K.D. Lang appeared on the cover of Vogue magazine. And if you want to know where Gentle Angry People came from, it was written by Holly Neer when George Moscone and Harvey Milk, openly gay members of the San Francisco City Council, were assassinated by another member of the council who didn't think people like that belonged in public life. And so we sang Gentle Angry People to one another. We sang to each other because it was all that was going to get us through, and we didn't know how we would do that. We didn't know what we would do if our parents saw our names in the paper, or if our spouses or partners were uncovered because we were passing. All of those things, we got through that with music, and that's one of the reasons that I'm sitting up here today to talk to you about it. When 300,000 Estonians appeared in a public arena in Tallinn, the capital of Estonia, in 1988, that's a third of the population of the country that came together to sing of their desire for freedom. They sang their way to freedom as the USSR collapsed. They got their freedom, and we can make it through the times that we have to get through today, as long as it's music or writing or walking or whatever your practice is, as long as you have a practice and do it regularly. In late June, I watched a documentary on public television. It was made for the Point of View series, and it told the story of a man from the Republic of Korea who flew himself to one of the worst slums in India that I have ever seen. His name was Kim, and the children that he worked with called him Sir Kim, but behind his back they called him Angry Bird. And one girl in that documentary pointed out that he had black hair when he got there, but gray hair as he left. And I think everybody who sings in the choir can relate to that. First, he taught the children to sing, and then he told them that they needed to bring their parents and their grandparents to the rehearsals, because he wanted their parents to sing to them too. So he tested their vocal ranges and their abilities to mimic a pitch. He told them that they were going to sing in a concert with their children. In one case, one man was too ill to get out of his bed and come to the rehearsals, so Sir Kim went to his house and taught him how to sing there, and he had parents and children singing to one another. It got a reaction that they had never experienced before, and that you may never have experienced either if you haven't looked someone in the eyes and sung to that person. One mother ended up singing a solo because she was the only person who could sing Amazing Grace and stay on pitch. A boy told the producers how much he wanted to sing with his father, and Sir Kim talked to a young girl who just had her first baby. It was born prematurely and had to go into an incubator, which was going to cost her family a lot of extra money. The baby's father came to see her and said, "Let her die. She's only a girl. I don't want a girl. I don't want a daughter. I want a son." And so this young girl was left to raise this baby on her own, as many children are in this country too. Rehearsal after rehearsal, children and parents learn what it means to sing to one another. He taught everyone how to communicate with music, and we watched the children gain confidence in school, even as their parents said, "This isn't making us any money. What's the worth of all this?" The children learned what it means to participate in civic life, and the parents learned that even though music doesn't necessarily add to your income, it adds something to your life that is absolutely priceless. This is the kind of music that helps us to stay grounded in hope instead of letting all that fear and despair take us over. It reminds us of what we're like when we're at our best, and we need to remember those things when we're thinking about stuff like climate change. We have to believe that we can make a difference. Those song lines that form the title of this particular reflection, we're creating those along with the Aboriginal people of Australia, because that's where the concept of song lines came from, that when Creator walked on this earth and sang, those song lines represented the land and the sea and the creatures that live there that we want to stay after we are finished. Every time we buoy our spirits with hope, those song lines become more deeply embedded in our hearts, in our minds, and in our spirits. We can sing along with people in this area who don't speak English very fluently. They use another language like Spanish, and that's the language that we're going to use next to sing something that's in your order of service. It's also in our Spanish hymnal. The Spanish words are Día ya es, Noche se fue, se alzó el sol, y que veo se ve, and it's a tune you'll know. And you play could you give us, let's see, this is in F, so give us an F major chord, please. We said, morning has come, and night is away, and our souls join together in creating this day. We've created the words sing and rejoice, or morning has come, and it doesn't matter what words you sing as long as you sing something. You can sing out of the old blue hymnal, which I actually found a copy of at the back of the sanctuary. This is the hymnal that we used to use when I first came to a Unitarian Universalist congregation. This is also the hymnal which every woman in our association said, "We are tired of singing about he. We are tired of the readings that only reflect men and expect us to say, oh, well, women are included. Didn't you hear yourselves?" And the answer is no, we didn't. And so the Women in Religion and the Women's Federation took the old blue hymnal and insisted that it be rewritten, that all of the readings use inclusive language. And today, we've gone even further, because instead of saying that just men and women are inclusive, Today we say, you know what? Gender's not binary. It's a continuum. And so there are people who say, get rid of the whole concept of gender. And you get to choose your gender today. If you like the gender you're in, keep it. If you don't, find out where you belong. Because men and women don't do it for everybody. And so that's how we come to welcome the trans community. So we've sung in English, we've sung in Spanish, we have a lot of words in our hearts, I hope, because music is a joy and it's a way of connecting with one another. So to finish the reflection and the singing and the changes in the seating of the sanctuary, we're going to sing one more before we sing what's already in your order of service. We're going to sing number 1053 in the teal hymnal. We keep going from hymnal to hymnal. We need them all. 1053 was written by a Canadian lesbian named Libby Roderick. The first time I ever heard this song, it was sung by a UU minister named Meg Riley. The title is How Could Anyone? And when Meg sang it to us, she cried. And so did we all. We could not get through the words of this song. So as you sing it, I want you to remember the time when I, as a lesbian, was not welcome in UU congregations. This isn't the way it always was. Things have changed, and we can help them to change even further. So 1053, please. So may it be.